from KQED.
Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. After months of scandals and a major review of the company's culture, Uber CEO Travis Kalanick has resigned under pressure from investors. Kalanick's critics hope the leadership shakeup will change the culture at the ride-hailing company, which has been facing allegations of sexual harassment and discrimination. And we're going to discuss the resignation and what it could mean for the San Francisco-based company, its employees, investors, and customers. Lots to cover here. Let me tell you who is joining us and helping us unpack. Eric Newcomer is technology reporter at Bloomberg. He joins us this morning. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have our own Quina Kim, who's senior editor for KQED Silicon Valley Desk. Welcome, Quina.
Hey, Michael.
Good to have you. Eric Newcomer, let me begin with you just to get some background here. There were five major investors, essentially shareholders, who demanded this, despite the fact that Kalanick had taken a leave of absence. He promised to shape up the company and shape up himself and so forth. Obviously, to some extent, this wasn't gaining points on those who forced his resignation here.
Right.
But give us a little more background about how, and flesh this out for us, if you could.
Yeah, the leave of absence basically left everybody unhappy. If you loved Travis, then you were disappointed that he was getting sidelined and his role was going to be diminished. You know, they were going to bring in a chief operating officer to run the company day to day and an independent board chair to sort of oversee him. If you didn't like Travis, you don't really get to put any of his baggage behind you because he's still hanging around the company, sort of meddling and very much tied to the company's brand and identity and its decision making. So it was the leave of absence became a decision that sort of pleased nobody. So then, like you said, we have these five major investors, which include Fidelity, which manages many of our retirement funds, and then Benchmark, an early stage venture firm, whose partner Bill Gurley was sort of key in this move to get Travis to step aside. And so there was just after the board failed to take action beyond, letting Travis decide to take this leave. Investors, many of whom were not on the board, stepped up and came to Travis with this letter saying, it's time to move forward.
And the other three were Lowercase Capital and First Bond Capital and Marlow Ventures.
Menlo Ventures.
To get them on the record here. But Quina, he's still in control in many ways. He's still on the board and he has a majority of voting rights, doesn't he?
Well, he's still on the board and he has it sort of tied up so that I guess technically he could have fought this ousting. But according to his note, he sort of just wanted, the company's been through a lot. And according to the note that he put out, he decided not to fight this and just sort of move on so that the company could move on and sort of focus on their business, which it seems like they haven't really been able to do in the last couple of months. He will still have a seat on the board. It seems like there's...
And he'll control a majority of voting.
Yes, correct. Yeah. But this seems to be a signal that he is realizing, like I said, he could have fought it, but he didn't. So it seems like he is realizing that the tide is shifting. And while he still has control, obviously this is a sign that it's, despite that, his position is weakening.
Well, there's such a history of conflict. I mean, Uber going against governments, going against unions, going against its own drivers, and really doing a great deal to ignore regulations. Plus, you have all the sexual harassment and within the culture and so forth. I mean, it's been a mess. And what they all have in addition to a PR crisis is all these executives who've left. I mean, there's a big void there, isn't there?
Right. And there's a lot of executives who've left or who've been ousted. I've even heard from folks who are within the company, lower level folks. There's some concern as to whether having worked at Uber, whether that sort of tarnishes your ability to get a job at your next place. It seems that they are having a hard time. For a little while, there was this plan to bring in sort of a chief operating officer or a Sheryl Sandberg, adult type figure to help out Travis Kalanick. And there have been reports that that position has been hard to fill because people have been hesitant to both join the company as well as work with a CEO who's sort of famously volatile and aggressive. So, that's been a problem. And I think what this is sort of is like a forward-looking problem. while Uber is still a very valuable company, and it seems like in terms of their day-to-day ride-sharing business, it hasn't really dropped off, they are going to have to go do their IPO at some point and have an exit. And I think what the concern is going forward, if they're going to become a public company, they're going to have to woo more investors, banks, high-profile partnerships to show that they're an ongoing concern. And how is that going to happen with this CEO who's so embattled and a company whose reputation is becoming tarnished? So I think it was really sort of a future-looking move in terms of bringing this company to an exit and bringing it to the public markets.
Quina Kim, again, is senior editor for KQED Silicon Valley Desk, and Eric Newcomer is technology reporter at Bloomberg. And Eric, what about all the, Quina said a lot of people left, but they also brought a lot of people in. They brought in Arianna Huffington. They brought in former AG Eric Holder because of particularly the sexual harassment allegations. This didn't necessarily move Travis in any way forward, obviously.
Right. Yeah, they've also brought in Francis Frey, a Harvard Business School professor who helped sort of turn that culture around to be Uber's senior vice president for strategy and leadership. They brought in Bozoma St. John, a marketing exec at Apple, to be their chief brand officer. So there have been new hires, but, you know, they're not the big key roles. You know, they don't have a chief financial officer. They need a general counsel. You know, they need and a CEO now. So, yeah, they've been able to sort of fill out the roles a little bit, but there are huge voids that in most normal functioning companies wouldn't be left open for this long.
There's no COO. There's no CFO. There's no executive for operations, marketing, business, or finance. Just to, you know, sort of skim the surface here. I'm going to give out the number because I know many of you have responses and certainly questions and things you might like to bring into the conversation here about Travis Kalanick's rather dramatic decision to leave Uber. And if you do want to contribute to the conversation or have your own say here, ventilate your own feelings or thoughts, you can join us at our toll-free number right now. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls. Certainly like to hear from Uber drivers Uber drivers not only give evaluations of those they drive, but those they drive give evaluations of the Uber drivers. So you may want to do it from either end. But please feel free to join us from or people who've worked at Uber or just people who've used it. 866-733-6786. Or if you just have some thoughts following this rather dramatic series of events involving this company. You can also post your comments or questions on our website or our Facebook page or email us. Email address is kqedtalk@gmail.com. That's kqedtalk@gmail.com. And you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Eric, let me go back to you just to sort of get the picture of what's happening around Uber now. I mean, there's a lawsuit from Waymo, the self-driving company that has a business operation under Google. There's a federal inquiry into software that was used by Uber to essentially get around law enforcement. So there's a lot that's pending and a lot that still has by any means not been resolved.
Yeah, exactly. Grayball, I mean, the Waymo lawsuit now is probably one of the biggest issues facing the company. I mean, you know, the trade secrets allegations and, you know, the question, Anthony Lewandowski, their executive that they had to fire for pleading the fifth and not helping them in their civil defense. So a lot of live issues there. And then I think, you know, some of the scandals that might still sort of get trickle out or are still being resolved, like these crazy allegations around their handling of the Indian rape case. You know, those Uber might be able to put some of those behind them by saying, you know, listen, our CEO is gone. But, you know, the Indian media is sort of still digging in to how Uber handled this Indian rape case. So all around the world, there are different scandals and issues that Uber has dealt with, and those aren't just going to go away overnight because the CEO resigns. And, you know, it's not, he's still on the board, you know, he's still part of the company.
And, Quina, let me go back to you on this because there have been some changes, and I'd like to get your response to them. Now tipping is allowed, whereas for years that was not the case with Uber. And just yesterday, Uber announced 180 days of change, part of a 6-month overhaul campaign. How do these things have impact, or in what ways?
Well, it's this ongoing push to try and change our culture. There have been a lot of reports that Uber drivers aren't necessarily happy with working for the company, and so obviously the tips thing is sort of a nod to trying to make them a little happier. It's something Lyft has been doing for a while now, so in some ways they're just sort of doing the same thing as other ride-sharing companies. And yeah, before this, before Kalanick resigned, there was that report that was given out, conducted by the former Attorney General Eric Holder, and there was a public report that they released. It was like 16 pages of various recommendations. So they had been sort of embarked on this idea of trying to transform the culture of their company, implementing some of the recommendations that Holder had given. So I think that's sort of ongoing. I don't know that that changes at all, but it's just an ongoing effort to try and revamp both the outward-looking, sort of the outward, the way people perceive the culture from the outside, consumers and drivers, as well as changing the culture on the inside.
Do you think it's bound to change in ways, for example, that will, because I'm thinking about the tips specifically, but company has been accused, as you're well aware and many of our listeners are aware, of treating drivers badly regarding both pay and benefits. Think there can be some really sea changes there, potentially?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you hear a lot about these. Do you mean by sea changes, like will people start leaving Uber and only drive Lyft? Or, I mean, you hear that stuff anecdotally, but quite frankly, when I've been in a lot of these Ubers and Lyfts, I don't really find that the drivers really feel like there's a huge difference. And they both seem to drive both Uber and Lyft. I don't think we're seeing a huge exodus of drivers, but obviously Lyft is trying to exploit the situation by seeming like, trying to cast itself as a more friendly company and more friendly towards drivers. But it was interesting. I do think there is a general, the only way that I've sort of been seeing it is that there is a general feeling with Lyft drivers that it's a friendlier company to work for. But when you ask them, they drive for both companies. So I'm not really seeing a big change there.
What about the resignation of David Bonderman? I mean, that's been overshadowed by the resignation of Travis Kalanick. David Bonderman was an Uber board member and a partner at a private equity firm, TPG, and he resigned because he said something. somebody said, we need more women here, and he made some derogatory remark about it'll just mean more talking or something like stupid.
Right.
Like that.
Fellow board member Arianna Huffington was saying that they are bringing in another female board member, and then he sort of quipped, well, that just means more talking at the board meetings, which, is actually not true according to a lot of studies.
Studies have proven the opposite, yes.
Right, exactly. And I think in some ways that seems, at least like in the public dialogue, seems to sort of tip the scales a little bit, because there was this question as to, while his comment was sort of sexist and offensive, compared to everything we're learning about Uber, it was really sort of, wasn't that damaging what he said, and yet he had to resign because Uber has this new face. So that sort of begged the question, so if he has to resign for this one comment, what's happening with the CEO who oversaw, sort of allegedly at least way more problematic, if sometimes illegal, skirting the law sort of tactics, and why isn't he being asked to resign? So where does the buck stop? And it seemed to sort of tip that conversation in that sense. If we're going to have accountability, is it going to be applied equally to everybody?
Talking to Quina Kim of KQED's Silicon Valley Desk and Eric Newcomer of Bloomberg, technology reporter. And we're going to go to your calls now. And let's go first to Dan. Dan, you're on. Good morning.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. My point that I like to make is that I think the ousting is probably just a cosmetic thing. I mean, Silicon Valley is a place where founders are considered practically minor deities. Look at Apple, Google, HP, Tesla. So this is probably just, cosmetic prepping for an IPO.
You read it that way, Eric Newcomer?
We'll have to see how strong the new CEO is, but I think it is a big difference. I mean, when you have five of your major shareholders turning against the CEO, I think that's a pretty strong thing to have happen. So I see the point that Travis is still around, but this is a pretty dramatic and embarrassing move for Travis. So I think he will have a much more diminished role.
We'll bring a caller on from Tampa, Florida, an Uber driver. James, welcome. You're on the air.
How are you doing today? My call is about mainly to talk about the feedback system It's a good thing that they're addressing the rates and addressing the tipping option that was badly needed and deserved. However, a big problem with Uber is the feedback option. It's been made too easy for people to use the feedback and rate the drivers lower for no reason at all. There's a documented history of college students rating the drivers low and putting false complaints in order to get free and reduced rides from Uber. And Uber would easily just refund it to them, take it from the driver, and then the driver has to contest it, you know, in order to get it back.
This is a big ongoing problem with Yelp and other places like the sort of thing you're talking about, people going into restaurants and young people especially. I don't mean to single them out, but you hear these stories and they're not just anecdotal. Saying, give me a bottle of wine or a dessert or I'll write a bad review. What about the feedback, Quina? Can you comment?
I'm interested from the driver if it's very much different from Lyft, because Lyft also has a feedback as well where you can rate your drivers and they can rate you. So I guess I'm sort of wondering if this is a complaint particular to Uber, because it seems like most of the ride sharing apps have this function.
Well, James, are you going to keep driving for them if you're concerned about this?
I have in the past month and a half slowed down a lot. I've only been driving just over 8 months. And I've seen periods of a little bit better, but worse. And whenever they did this recent thing of the, supposedly being more clear of the earnings, well, that was a little funny to show in this area that the drivers were getting, previously it was showing 70 cents a mile, and then it drops down to 60 cents a mile after they were, quote unquote, more clear of what the driver was earning. I think that was a little deceptive more than being more clear.
Well, I appreciate you joining us, and I thank you for the call. We'll go to more calls in just a moment, but here's a comment. It's actually a question. Let me go to you on this, Eric Newcomer. William says, can someone explain how Uber warrants its valuation? When does the air leave this bubble?
Well, that's the beauty of these private market valuations. You sort of get to take the last money in and say that's what the company's worth. Even if you don't raise new money, we don't say, oh, it's dropped in its value, right? The $69 billion comes from valuation plus the amount of money raised from, you know, the Saudi investment and then the Didi deal. So we haven't really seen an update. You know, to say it's worth $69 billion doesn't reflect what someone would actually pay to own Uber's stock today. And, you know, there are all sorts of technicalities around preferred shares and common shares. So common shares could be worth even less. So I think it's a totally reasonable question. There's just, it's an illiquid market, so we don't have a good sort of vantage point into what Uber is actually worth. And that's sort of the challenge of a private company, but the benefit for Uber that it gets to sort of shield itself from backlash to its share price.
And let me read a couple more listener comments, one serious one and one in a comic vein, which we can always use. Romano writes, seriously, what's sad here are all the hardworking drivers who are now tainted with the broad brush of their leaders' unprofessional and unethical behavior. And then Neil writes, Uber should appoint Colin Kaepernick to replace Travis Kalanick. Solve many problems in one. let me get another caller on. And that's you, Eileen. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. Nice to be talking to you.
Thank you. Likewise.
So I'm a female CEO of several VC-backed companies here in Silicon Valley. And I'm just calling to tell you that not only I, but many of my women friends and employees have been boycotting Uber for some time. So to the earlier caller who was asking whether or not this was just window dressing, I actually think Uber's bottom line might improve because a number of previous riders may return. One final comment, maybe Uber should consider a female CEO. What might that do to the bottom line?
Okay, Queen of Kim, what do you think about the return of Uber drivers who have boycotted?
Yeah, you know, I think that's definitely a big sentiment here in the Bay Area. But I've seen recent reports that, you know, there's been people deleted that app after the delete Uber hashtag. But in terms of sort of general ridership in the whole of the United States, it doesn't seem to have gone down. And in fact, it's still sort of increasing. And I have to say, just anecdotally, I was in L.A. recently in Santa Monica, which is another sort of bastion of liberalism. And there wasn't the same sort of consciousness about Uber and Lyft there. I mean, people were like sort of had heard about it, but it wasn't as sort of keenly palpable here, where you do find a lot of folks who have deleted Uber and are just using Lyft exclusively. So I'd be curious to see how widespread that is. But I do think what is important about that is, you know, in terms of perception here in Silicon Valley, it is important because this is where a lot of Uber's workforce comes from. And it just sort of adds to this general narrative that, you know, it's just not a great place to work. It doesn't have a great reputation. And here you are in the Bay Area as a tech worker and all your friends are deleting Uber and don't like it. So in that sense, in terms of trying to attract talent, in terms of trying to make an attractive place to work, I do imagine there has been some damage there.
Well, a lot of the problems had to do with Kalanick, though. So this would be at least the potential of a fresh start. What do you think of the likelihood or possibility is of hiring a female CEO, as the caller asked? Queena?
Well, there's been some talk about that. I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens. But yeah, I mean, I guess that would be sort of the best marketing strategy. I can't really speak internally to, you know, the sort of business strategy.
Well, here's a listener named Tony who says, the outsiders Uber brought in are not management professionals. They're firefighters. Compare this with Google, where Sergey and Larry brought in Eric Schmidt when they needed a professional business structure and strategy. Uber's board of directors is either dumb, incompetent, or both. That sounds a bit harsh, but Eric Newcomer, they need an Eric Schmidt?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the issues Uber's investors have had with Travis Kalanick is that he didn't really seem to be willing to yield power. He brought in Jeff Jones, Target's former chief marketing officer, to be the company's president. And then in 6 months, Jones was gone. So, Kalanick hired, you know, someone who worked with Eric Schmidt, Rachel Whetstone, as his head of policy and communications. And then she left in sort of a bit of a fight. So, you know, he hadn't really done a good job of integrating sort of elite talent, and I think that was a major criticism of him. So the company definitely sort of wants to start to hire people who have done this before and, you know, let them do it again.
Let's bring in some Uber drivers. I'm sorry, Queena, you were saying something?
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, I think if we're going to pull back a little bit and sort of beyond Uber, what's sort of interesting is I feel like one of the marks of this tech boom has been that, you know, the CEO, I mean, sorry, the founder leads great tech companies, right? And it was a narrative fueled by Steve Jobs, who was ousted from the board of Apple, or ousted from Apple, and then he came back and the company saw this resurgence. And so there's been this sort of like idolatry of CEOs, of founders, not entirely new, but a little bit more exaggerated this tech boom. And I would be curious if that pendulum is going to start swinging back. And you had mentioned, or the comment had mentioned, you know, back at the last boom, they brought in Eric Schmidt to sort of guide the ship of Google from the founders. Even with Facebook, we saw Sheryl Sandberg being brought in to sort of be, I guess, what people called, quote, adult supervision, somebody who had a lot of experience sort of guiding the company, but the founder having the vision, working in tandem. So it would be curious going forward if this starts making that pendulum swing back a little bit more.
All right, I'm reading a comment here by a driver named Wayne who says, I'm an Uber and Lyft driver. I think Uber will still survive in the absence of Travis Kalanick. The platform has changed the nature of work. It has changed the paradigm for how people travel. I get Uber versus Lyft drives at a ratio of about 8-1 as a driver. I don't really care about the politics, and most companies just want an efficient ride. So let me get a Susan caller on from Berkeley who is a driver also. Susan, welcome. Susan, do we have you on the air? Okay. Let me go next then to Jim. Jim, who's also a driver. Jim, go ahead.
Hi, I'm a driver. I'm in San Francisco now, 9 months of experience. I think it'd be nice if they brought in drivers to create an advisory board, drivers speaking back to management and giving them feedback.
Okay. Interesting thought. In fact, maybe we ought to get into the question here, and let me go to you on this, Quina. Drivers considered now employees or independent contractors? What's the status?
They're still considered contractors, which is a point of contention amongst the drivers, you know, for various reasons, but also mostly because they don't get benefits like health care or retirement or that sort of stuff. And then to the driver's point, I know that at least early on, Lyft did have those sort of advisory committees where they would, you know, bring in drivers to their San Francisco headquarters here, and the founders would actually meet with them and talk to them and figure out sort of what they're dealing with. And I know at least early on that did really endear them with other drivers. It sort of made them feel a little bit more part of the family if Lyft versus Uber. So I guess it's sort of an interesting suggestion.
Well, there also have been suggestions, Eric Newcomer, about not only human resources in Uber and the way people ought to be hired and all that, but just generally a sense that employees are treated unfairly and they're treated in ways that not only don't serve them, but probably don't serve their customers as well.
Yeah, I thought one of the more interesting points made in former U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder's investigation into Uber was that the company needed to get rid of its cultural values. It has these 14 cultural values that Travis Kalanick helped co-author. And, you know, a couple of them that were called out: always be hustling, meritocracy and toe-stepping, and principled confrontation. And Holder made the point that those had been used to sort of justify all sorts of poor behavior at the company. And so when the company's...
Yeah, who says in a company culture toe-stepping is a prized value?
Right, exactly. So when you're articulating that and saying that that's what we're about, it can't be a surprise that you're going to have lots, you're going to toe step all over people, and people don't like that, you know, regulators, customers, drivers, you know. And so I think just the fact that getting rid of those explicit values, changing them, saying we need new ones, we need leaders who would write different ones, I think that's what Uber's trying to do.
Well, here's another Uber driver. Lisa says, I'm an Uber driver. I've been working for them for almost 2 years. The incentives, pay, and abundance of work was great in the beginning. That's not the case now. Uber needs to get the corporate office in better shape and better reward drivers. Let me get another caller on who's a driver. Melanie in San Jose, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead, please.
Hi. I've been driving for Uber since 2014 in the Bay Area since 2015. And that driver feedback thing is really, really important. For example, okay, and I can't get anybody at Uber to change this. We live in the Bay Area. We have 7 bridges here. Their technology calls our bridges branches, okay? We don't go across the Dumbarton branch or San Mateo branch or Golden Gate branch. We do go across the Bay Bridge because they spelled it out. But that kind of feedback on pronunciation and things like that that are just ludicrous.
So anything else you want to change? These are big deals.
Well, no, they're very big deals. Well, there's a lot of things I'd like to see Uber do. But as a driver, I can't get past their pull-down menu.
All right, we'll have to leave it there because we're out of time. Melanie, thank you for the call. And thank you to Eric Newcomer, technology reporter at Bloomberg. Good to have had you with us.
Thanks,
Eric,
for having me.
And thanks to Quina Kim, senior editor for KQED's Silicon Valley Desk. Thank you, Quina.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you, our listeners. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, and hours repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. You can always let us know what you think about what you hear on Forum or what you'd like to hear by emailing us, kqedtalk@gmail.com. That's kqedtalk@gmail.com. Thank you for being a part of the program, and we'll be back with you tomorrow, actually, with Colm Toibie, Irish writer, has a new book out about Clytemnestra, Greek mythology. It's a novel. That's up ahead tomorrow. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.